The following episode has a video component, which can be found on the webpage for Turn the Page Podcast in the show notes.
Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast, and our guest today is, introduce yourself, please.
My name is Tim Fielder.
I am a graphic novelist and visual Afrofuturist, and I made the book called Infinitum, an Afrofuturist Tale, and I'm happy today to be here with you guys
in the library.
Well, this is really cool because the way that this episode is going to go is it's going to have a visual counterpart to it, which is not, it's something we've played with a few times. It's not what we always do, but it's always fun to have that opportunity because since COVID hit, Turn the Page has kind of tried a whole bunch of different ways of reaching out. So we do voice, but we also do visual stuff too. And what better way to do visual stuff than with somebody who is a graphic novel artist? This book is epic. And I'm not just saying the word epic because that's what, yeah, there we go. That's what the kids say. It really is. Please tell us about where this all came from.
Okay. I've been doing some form of visual Afrofuturism since I was a child. I'm 54 now, middle-aged man, and I'm from Clarksdale, Mississippi. And I've been doing Black characters of color in science fiction scenarios since I was literally before I went to high school. And then the previous 8 years before that, I was just doing straight comics. You know what I mean? So I'm the youngest of four siblings, and I've been doing it so long. And Infinitum, after a long, I'm trying to figure out the best way to say it, say decades of working, I finally got around to doing a story that story that is in the vein of that work, which I've always tried to do, but was never able to get it out to the mainstream. What's interesting this time is that it's not that I just kept working because I did. It's the world has caught up to what I do. And that is so fascinating to me because it's such an honor to do this. And people have really responded well to the book. The book is about an ancient African warlord named Aja Oba. And he makes the dreaded mistake of angering a woman by taking her child. And she curses him with the gift, putting up my quotation fingers here, right, of immortality. And he is forced, as she says, as she puts the hand, I'm gonna put the Kirby hand up there like Jack Kirby. She curses him with immortality, forcing him to live for eons and eons and eons, seeing all those he loves rise and wither to dust, all the civilizations, all the way to the end of the stars. And that is, I wanted to do an epic science fiction in the vein of Asimov and Robert Heinlein, all those writers, but to do it visually.
Right, yeah. There's a lot in this story that I think people are going to love. Now, of course, the artwork is absolutely gorgeous. It is so beautiful that, like, I'm actually scrolling through my ARC right now, and just the textures and just the way that the light works. I can't say enough about it. It is so rich. The story, one of the things that struck me was how classic of a tale it is. When you go back and you look at folklore and mythology, and those are some of my favorite types of literature, there is You know, you who was it? Joseph Campbell talks a lot about the hero, the different things.
Hero's journey. Yes.
Yes, the hero's journey. The idea of the curse of immortality, or the curse of something that somebody would normally think is a blessing. You know, in some cases, people would wish for it and they'd say, I want to live forever. But that's not exactly what you should wish for. In this case, it is outright a curse. Is just so well drawn. Where I would imagine that you yourself are a big fan of folk tales and mythology.
I am. Just as Joseph Campbell says, which of course there would be no Star Wars without Joseph Campbell.
Right. You know, yeah.
And I'm a Star Wars guy.
Oh, so am I. I'm a
Star Wars gal. Yeah, you understand what I'm saying. You know, you know, we had to put up our, we got to put up our, it's a membership card, right? But I wanted to do something. The best stories, the best myths are those where the characters are imperfect. Because humans, us, this matter, like Yoda, we pull the best stories from when it is a story about redemption. We've made a mistake and we pay for that mistake, but that mistake defines us, but that does not keep us from constantly striving to correct, to self-correct. Because that is really what separates humans from many other life forms, is that we have the ability to reprogram or self-correct. And the best science fiction stories are like that. You know, Foundation by Asimov tells basically an empire is gonna end. There's a scientist who becomes aware of it, and the empire hates that fact, right? But it's because they're able to map out the flaws of humankind.
Right.
Yeah. And that in turn becomes a flaw that we have to overcome. And it's something that technology can't get us past it. We'll be dealing with that till the end of time.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. And there's something just so haunting about the idea of there being an inevitable end to things. One of the things I think that is really cool that keeps coming up in the book is, you know, with each era that ends, something new comes. So there's a million endings. And the way that mortality is supposed to work is that you might get to see some of them and you might get to see beginnings of others, but you're not standing on that precipice forever. You know, you're not like watching things pass underneath you forever. And the different things that your main character goes through, you know, like in the very beginning, he's a warlord, and he never really loses that quality either. Right. It's always part of something that's true to himself. But I guess, you know, his sense of, arrogance maybe changes.
I will say this.
Go for it.
Being a warlord is not always a good thing.
Right.
Sometimes a very, very, very bad thing. It's like a Rambo, right? That's a character, right? Yeah, he's a warrior. And sometimes he's fighting on the side of good. But it kind of takes its toll on the warrior and the family of the warrior. That's one of the things I wanted to look at. You know, it's about dealing with the price that is paid by all those who engage violence, whether they give it or receive it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I tried my best, not saying that I succeeded. I tried my best to make sure that this book worked on multiple levels. Now, of course, the hook, you know, that beat for me is the visual. I knew, because I could have done the book in black and white, I could have done it in straight pencil, but something told me, you're doing a story that will be difficult for some folks. You know, it will be difficult for some women, they will find issues with it, correctly so. So the only way to make this work, particularly, you know, there'll be people who will have issues with it based on race, you know, ethnicity. There will be people, if you have an issue with colonialism, it's in there. And I wanted to do a story where I had multiple levels of complexity. So the visuals had to be on point. Just, you know, if the best medicine, the medicine that's weak. And that's honestly what I tried to do, because I knew this story. This is not a story for young kids. It is a story for grown folk. I will say, you know, if you're, you know, a mature 13-year-olders can watch it, and then all the way up to the age of 105. But that's what I wanted to try to do. But, you know, I'm going to say this is going to sound weird. People don't have to buy my book. They don't have to read my book. Then I have to read it. For them to read my book pays me honor and the privilege. If that makes sense, it's like, if they're going to sit up and read my book, then I had better deliver 1,000% of everything I had. And trust me, my arms feel like they were about to fall off after about 18 months in.
So how long did it take you to draw everything?
So I started on the book. I came up with the story in the early 2000s. And I was tinkering with it, just little things, but you know, I never really got, because at that point I had left comics. I left comics back in like 99, 2000. Yes, I was in animation.
Oh my gosh, we have so much to talk about. I am animation fiend.
So you see what I'm saying? Yeah. I was in animation. So I'm a hybrid animator.
Right.
I do a combination of 2D and 3D. I'm very bad at character animation, but what I mean, to this day, I still teach character, concept design, environmental design, prop design, right? I teach people how to do that in animated films or projects or video games. To this day, I can't believe I'm still doing it. So I learned that as I worked in the video game industry. And the idea is that everything in Infinitum is done digitally. You know, you still have to draw, you know, it hurts. Don't get it twisted. I've been looking for that make art button. It doesn't exist, right?
Well, I mean, and you wouldn't have.
That
it has.
Exactly. So, but I, as a hybrid artist, like for example, there are sequences in there where ships are landing on planets because they're colonizing different planets.
Yeah.
Those ships are done in 3D.
Yeah, I actually was looking at them, and I mean, like I said, I'm a big animation person mm-hmm. myself, and it was almost like, I don't know how else to say it other than it was like watching something cinematic, but it was on a page.
Yes, and the reason why is because you want to mask your ambitions. You want to map your ambitions appropriate to your goal. Now, my goal was when people read this book, I wanted them to feel like they were seeing something, that they were in it. It was sweeping in scale, like, you know, Cecil B. DeMille, or, you know, George Lucas, you know, the Red Sea parts, you know, that type of thing. And the only way to do that, in at least as far as I'm concerned, there are plenty of ways to do it, but the way I chose to do it was it had to pull from the Kurosawa.
Absolutely. Yes.
Right. It had to pull from Kurosawa. It had to pull from Orson Welles. It had to pull from all of those great cinematographers and those great set designers from the Bond movies. It had to be big in scale, but also not be, you know, afraid of having small intimate moments where necessary. And because being an author is, you know, whether you're doing novels or graphic novels, it is like writing music. There are peaks and valleys, and there are slow parts and there are fast parts. You just have to know how to pace it. And that was, to answer your question, I just went around the universe to answer your question. When I got the contract, I had already started on the book.
Okay.
And I had put about 6 months into it. Well, I put about 12 months into it. I signed in the summer of 2019. By the end of 2019, I turned in my first finished manuscript. I thought I was done. They came back with edits, and that added another 4 months, as well as almost another 30 pages to the book. So I finished just as the pandemic began.
What a yes. time to finish.
Let me tell you, it was so amazing. Now, that was just the physical part, but then we would spend from March all the way till August, September, doing color proofs. So I would get the thing, I would have to say, make this 20% lighter. These are all the technical things for those folks who are listening. It's like doing a book, it's not just drawing. You have to make sure the book is appropriate for publication. Are the colors right? You know, does the saturation look good? You know, does it convey the emotion that I want it to have? And I wanted to do something, you know, I think we just lost Aroina Merrill, who's one of the great, great science fiction, fantasy cover painters. In fact, we lost a number of people. Ron Cobb, who designed the DeLorean in Back to the Future. Sid Mead, who designed Blade Runner. These people mean so much to me. They mean so much to my career. I wanted to do it like that.
When you talk about just like those quiet moments, and also, you know, just with the spaceships, mm-hmm. This is definitely going to be one of those episodes where people are either going to get it or they're not, because I am such a fan of animation and art. Mm-hmm. There is I had to look up the name because it escaped me for a minute. Leiji Matsumoto, who has these epic, I guess, space operas, Galaxy right. Express 999, and mm-hmm. you know, just the way that the animation would work in those stories, and like when the spaceships would land, and you just have like just a lot of time looking at the vastness of space and the characters. And his characters are very weird because like they've got certain things about them that you'd look at them and you'd be like, okay, that's anime, but it's certain features that are usually accentuated anime, like the big eyes, and he doesn't always use that,
right.
Which I always found very interesting about him. But you know, there is like one specific scene in your book where the spaceships are all landing, and I just kind of got that Galaxy Express 999 feel right. from it.
Right. All right. So I wanted this to pay homage to this, the great, great Japanese designers. Now, these guys, what makes them good, this is for your readers out there, Akira by Akira Kurosawa, is started out as a manga. I mean, it was a comic, a Japanese comic.
Yeah.
But it became arguably one of the greatest animated films of all time. And so there's an aspect to that. And by the way, it's so nice to talk to a geek. With all due respect, fellow geeks, put up your sign, put up your geek sign. There you go. There you go. Right. So it's always so nice to... they have this thing called mechanical design. So you have the character design, right?
Right.
But then you have the mechanical design. The mechanical design of the vehicles, the props, and there has to be a mechanical logic behind the design of the machines, the equipment, the props, but those machines, those objects also have to have character. This is why the whole giant robot motif.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, it's not realistic, but you have to make it believable. which is a different
thing. It's not realistic. I want a Gundam. What do you mean it's not realistic?
No, no, but see, check it out. Check it out. So here's what I mean by that. Here's what I mean by that. Not realistic and believable. There's not a huge chasm between the two. For example, mm-hmm. Avatar, right? There's the scene at the, you know, well, not at the end where they want these basically mech bots, right?
Right.
Do you know there's technology out there that essentially does what those robots do?
No.
As soon as they figure out the gyroscopic element that allows it to be able to balance, it's over. Basically, people will be inside these giant robots with gyros on their arms, basically walking, right? So that's taking something that's unrealistic, or, you know, the idea that, well, that can't happen yet because of the speculative nature of science fiction, but making it real because it bridges the gap between the two. And that's what I was trying to do with Infinitum. I'm a Afrofuturist, but I'm also, as amazing, I'm actually studying to become a licensed futurist now.
Please tell us about that. So first of all, for our listeners, for those who don't know, please tell us about what Afrofuturism is, and then tell us about this study, because that's really cool.
Right. So Afrofuturism is the intersection between when you take race, race politics, race modalities, and you take society, political mores, and you take technology and you mash them together. And so what happens when those things are mashed together, the forms that come up from that is Afrofuturism. So I, you know, for me, it, you know, before Afrofuturism as a name was created, obviously we, you know, I'm a Black American. So we've been doing this. I've been doing this since I was a young boy. So the idea of producing something and wanting it to relate to people of color, it's my goal, but it can apply in so many different areas. It can be applied to dance, it can be applied to TV production, it can be applied to politics. There are those who believe that Barack Obama was an Afrofuturist. Why? He saw himself in the White House, a spot that could never have happened before. When Nichelle Nichols was Lieutenant Uhura, the first primary Black character in the science fiction, played by a brilliant Black woman, actress, quit that job. She quit, but she turned in a resignation letter on Friday. Gene Roddenberry said, well, take the weekend to think about it. She goes to a fundraiser gathering over the weekend, and the head of the thing says, hey, look, your biggest fan is here. And she says, oh, great. And in comes Martin Luther King, who is her biggest fan. And she has to tell him, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not doing that anymore. I just quit.
Yeah.
And he says to her, you can't do that. So it's the idea that she then went back on Monday and said, look, I'm not going to do that. I want to continue. And Roddenberry, God bless him, the guy was a genius, basically had already ripped up the resignation letter, but it changed the world. Not just changed her life, it changed my life, your life. Think about it. If you really think about it, not only was this the first Black character of note in visual Afrofuturism, she was practically the first, one of the first female characters with agency.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So that's what Afrofuturism is. Now, futurism, technically it's where people who study trends and they make projections about what's coming in the future, right? So they use futurists all the time to make trends on climate, you know, climate change. You know, what is the world going to look like in 30 years if greenhouse gases aren't dealt with? You know, will the coasts evaporate? Like there's a section in Infinitum where there's one of the you know, I won't go in because I don't want to put spoilers, but it's just a little line of, hey, the reformed Celts line. That's a nod, because I know as a futurist, there are certain things we're going to get together, but there are certain things we're not going to get together.
Right.
Like my wife is from New Orleans. So I had not gone to New Orleans till 2012, even though I lived in Mississippi, not that far from New Orleans. I didn't go till 2012. And if you spend any amount of time in New Orleans, you realize it's underwater. It's in a bowl.
Yep.
And although there's parts of New Orleans I love, but you have to accept that climate change is parts of it are man-made, but parts of it are inevitable because we're so far along. So when you're doing speculative fiction, you need to behave as a futurist in order to give the audience the elements they need to buy into your story. So I have the opportunity now to train as a futurist. And the reason why I'm doing that, one, because I'm fascinated with the field, but also because it's gonna make me a better author. You know what I mean? I did Infinitum. The next story I'm doing is Maddie's Rocket. Very happy about that. But the difference between Maddie's Rocket and Infinitum is what they call hard science fiction. So when you take into account things like the laws of physics, I mean, obviously I have to take some liberties, right? But you tend to adhere more to the laws of physics and science. Maddie's Rocket is space fantasy. It's Star Wars. It's not real.
Yeah, that's true. And as a huge Star Wars fan, it is a space fantasy.
Space opera.
Yeah. Yeah.
Star Trek flirts with hard science fiction.
It does. It does. I know there's all sorts of things that have been published about things that are in Star Trek that we kind of have now.
Sure.
It's loose enough that, oh, yep, exactly, yeah. Yep, our
communicators and cell phones.
Communicators and cell phones.
That's it.
Of course, you know, I mean, especially in the pandemic, the holodeck, come on, why couldn't we have that now?
I think we're 15 years out.
Really?
Because, I own a Rift S. The Rift, you've seen the
right,
Rift?
Right, 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 yeah.
All it requires really, okay, this is, you know, we're not supposed to be talking about this kind of hard sci-fi stuff here. We're just supposed to be joking. Anyway, so this is why I think it's going to happen. The Rift S basically, or any VR headset, is basically a virtual world contained with an array of projectors inside the headset, right? But Unreal Engine, like Unity, these are game engines. So when you're playing, and this is for the viewers, when you guys are playing video games, you're playing animation that in order for it to play back in real time, so if you move your character, it moves real fast. That's what's called a game engine is rendering out that scene in real time. It's not taking an hour or two to render out a frame. It's literally rendering it out in real time. When you take Oculus, right, what they're doing with VR headsets, and you take what Epic Games is doing with Unreal Engine or the Unity guys, and you feel it, what's going to make it work is what comes in the middle. And I believe what comes in the middle, this is going to be weird. You remember this thing?
Yeah.
Right. This is the Google Glass. Now, I'm probably one of the few people that still has mine. I still have my Google Glass, right? I don't think this is far off. I think as soon as they figure out a way to make it miniaturized, and society gets over the fact that, oh, this is not an invasion of privacy because you've already lost your privacy every time you go on Facebook, right? Yeah. Hey, you know, I get it. When they can bridge that gap, because I believe the computing power is already there. what was it? It was a VR company that that became what is it on Wall Street? I think it was 28 some billions. It was insane, and that's 15 years.
Hmm. That's so wow. In 15 years, I'll email you and I'll be like, hey, about that.
In 15 years, you won't have to. We'll say, hey, let's meet up in the coffee shop in Sector 7 of VR land.
Awesome. I can't wait. So getting back to Infinitum, you were talking about how you've been writing this for a while and then society caught up with it.
Yeah.
I was very struck by how much that kind of, you know, it was like your character, he was in a society and he went through, you know, he went through being a king and mm-hmm. then slavery and the civil rights movement and then just everything. And then suddenly things kept catching up and losing him at the same right. time.
Right.
It's kind of, oh, what's the word I'm looking for? It's kind of like in that way, did you find that you felt like it was almost like art imitating life or?
Well,
the two things
I'll say it to you this way. First of all, we can say Infinitum is fake. It's not real.
No, that's it is not. Yeah.
It's all make believe, guys. I made it up. Right. That's the first thing. Second thing is that I created that device. Well, let me rephrase that. I didn't create that device. There have been immortals in literature throughout time. Methuselah, that's a guy who basically kept living, right? Highlander, you know, there can only be one, you know.
And that's then there's like tons. there can only be one, but then there's a TV show and there's lots. Yes.
It's immortal. You know, Octavia Butler in Wild Seed dealt with a level of immortality.
Yes.
So that is a trope, not only in science fiction, but just in straight literature. It happens. I mean, Benjamin Button, even Forrest Gump has an element of this person who moves through time relatively unchanged, even though he was changed and altered by its experiences. So I took all those classic elements and I put them in my story, and I wanted to do it because as a story device, when you deal with Afrofuturism, I needed to be able to touch on all of these things. I wanted to touch on the works of Charles Saunders, who did the whole Black Barbarian thing of MRO, Samuel R. Delaney, which is pre-cyberpunk, Octavia Butler, which I don't even think you can call stuff like Parable of the Sower science fiction anymore. I think you call it a documentary, you know, a news report, nightly news report, right?
Yeah, that's been coming up a lot. In,
you know what I mean? You know, Make America Great Again, it's all in the book. It's crazy. You know, did you have a time machine or something when you wrote that? So I wanted to deal with all of those different aspects and the idea of using immortality as a story device to drop in and drop out, but to do it in a meaningful way was the objective. Now, I will say this, and this is something I told my editor as we were coming towards the end of the book. She was asking, why does the character suffer the way he does? And I've said this before, but I think it's important because we need to be realistic about what immortality is and what immortality isn't, and to just consider what the human life cycle is about. And I told her, I answered the question, I said, we are not meant to live forever. We are meant to rot and decay, providing sustenance for those who come after. And what that means is people are like, what do you mean? My body's going to decay? Yeah, in certain cases, yes. But what it really means is your memories, the thing that you represent, the things that you leave behind, that is immortality. As I think I demonstrated, I think we can admit when you read the book, I demonstrated you don't want to live forever. That would be a bad idea, right? But
yeah.
The memory of you should live forever. You should strive to put your imprint on society in a positive way that society can continue. It's like Gene Roddenberry. Think about it. As crazy as that idea he had, I want to live in that world.
Yeah.
I want to live in a world where there's equality, there are issues, but we strive to overcome them and we use technology as a positive thing. Now, that's not quite what Infinitum is. Infinitum is more Game of Thrones, right?
It's definitely a lot more. It's interesting, and I know we only have a few minutes left.
Okay, and I got to draw you if you give me a chance.
Oh, please, yes, of course. We have sons, and we've indoctrinated them into Star Wars and all sorts of nerdy things. Sure. But my husband was watching Star Trek one day, and because kids, it's easy when you're playing Star Wars, you get your lightsabers and you get your blaster. But my son put on a coat and just kind of walked around the rooms, and I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I'm playing Star Trek. And I'm like, yeah, they do spend a lot of time walking around the ship.
That's what they do. They spend a lot of time walking around the ship. And it's quite fascinating. And I think that what I love about doing this work, and like I said, I don't know how the book is going to do. I hope it does well. I believe it is doing well. But for me right now, if there's anything I can say, and I'm drawing you here, you're drawing because I got to do this kind of quick here. She's like, oh, Lord, why did I agree to do this?
No, it's okay. I'm totally fine. I'm totally fine with it. I think the ideals that Roddenberry was really going for.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's the one to strive for. That's why I love the idea of going to Mars. I mean, am I going to live on Mars? Of course not. But we waste money on things that are irrelevant on this planet all the time. And why not use something that is going to be aspirational and it's going to have folks to feel like they are part of something and that they can, we can have something. There's a show for all mankind. It's not perfect. But what it does is it shows that what if, and that's the beauty of fiction, what if we actually did something where we kept striving to go to the stars? What would happen to us as a society? And that is what Infinitum strove to do, what I hope to achieve in that in that book. And I hope that people took that from it. And I know she's like, oh Lord.
No,
it's like, I'm good. I got you. So by the way, ladies and gentlemen, for those folks who are looking, I am drawing Rebecca.
Jessica.
I'm sorry, Jessica.
That's okay.
And I want to make sure that I get her correct here. And I'm just putting, because this right here is going to be more kind of anime-esque.
Oh, I'm excited.
With the flat color, because I don't have time to do a full painting, but I do have time to drop in some flat color. And by the way, your glasses are awesome.
Thank you. I actually have, these were kind of my, I meant to get something completely not like this when I went to get my glasses, and it just didn't happen. I saw them and I was like, yeah, no, I'm gonna go home with those no matter how much I wanted something low-key. These are the ones I'm going home with.
All right, so we're almost done here, and I know you got to get to the desk, so I got about 3 minutes to finish this.
So question, what are some we talked about a lot of big names. Are there any small things that, like, hidden gems that you would recommend to people as an author illustrator yourself? Everybody knows about Akira, or they should, and some of the and Star Wars. But what are some low key favorites of yours?
I would say I'm a huge fan of. This is going to sound really obscure. There's a guy named Hiramoto Shinichi, or Shinichi Hiramoto. And he adapted years ago this book. He did the adaptation of Star Wars as a manga.
I've seen it. I knew the name sounded familiar. Yeah.
I love that man's work because I first became aware of him back in the 90s when he did a crazed book, and not appropriate for kids, by the way, guys, a strip called Single Action Army. And it was absolutely bonkers. I would also say that there are a number of cartoonists of color who are really kicking much butt lately. And I would encourage folks to go out to read them. There's an author who I love her work is Micheline Hess. And she does a comic or graphic novel series called Ovenland about a young lady who goes through her oven while doing chores into this magical kingdom.
That's and wild. Micheline,
yes, Micheline is such an amazing artist, but what's really incredible, believe it or not, is Micheline is one of the most innovative cartoonists that I've ever seen because she now works in VR. Yes, she does. She works in VR, and I think, I'm gonna make this prediction. I think she's next. People are gonna be hearing about her, and you will one day say, you know what, Tim said this lady was gonna be next. So I think Micheline Hess is next. In terms of the Afrofuturism angle, I believe that, let's get here. Okay, oh, your hair is amazing, by the way. I don't know if anyone's gonna tell you that, but I'll just let you know, it's like, man, her hair is like red. You know, it's incredible, you know. But I think she is next, but I would love the work of Greg Anderson Ilese, who does a strip called Is Nana, which is awesome. My good friend Jason Reeves does amazing work. And of course, there's John Jennings just did this book with David Brame and Nnedi Okorafor, After the Rain, which just came out as well. So I think there are a number of works out there that I think that are going, and I'm just putting these strands of hair. Your hair is incredible.
Thank you. You know?
So, all right, hang on, we got there. All right, and then we got this here. All right, now. We're gonna just drop in flat color. We're gonna drop in flat color. He said, "Man, I gotta go." We're gonna drop in flat color because we have to drop in flat color. If we're without flat color, it doesn't work. Okay, we're gonna go here. We're gonna make that right there into a multiply layer. Yes, guys, this is how when you're under the gun, how you have to work. Okay, now we're gonna go here. I don't know if it's gonna work, but we're gonna see. And go here. Yep, there. We're gonna drop that point down there.
This is so fascinating to like watch to your mind work while you're doing.
Well, it's because now I'm under pressure, you know, because I don't know if it's gonna work, but you know what? There are the things where you have to throw it off to faith. You have to just have faith and just believe that, you know what? I've been drawing long enough. I believe, and even if it doesn't, just do the best that you can. Final thing as we're closing out here. Oh no, we need to drop that. There's a little bit more right there. Okay, good. Okay. I got it. I wanted to make sure I got that color right because your hair is incredible. I'm sorry I keep mentioning your hair, but it's just absolutely incredible.
Thank you.
But I'm gonna go here.
All I can say about that is when I was younger and my parents would take me down to Florida, the little old ladies would love to touch it. They'd just come out of the woodwork and be like, "Hi, I'm just gonna."
They used to touch my hair too, but that was obviously a long time ago. All right, so now we're gonna put in the little gray here. Not the gray in your hair, just the gray in these.
Oh, hair. I have it, it's cool.
No, it's good. Go here, bing, boom, bing, boom, bing. And then you have your light lime green shirt. And we go right there. We like really, 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 really lime green. And then you have a green, kind of a cyan type blouse on. Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
I think I'm good. Let me put a little glint on the, oops, nope, not that right there. There we go. Boop, 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 boop. Oh, no, and we'll go here, top. Bye, whoop, bye, bye. Okay. Woo. Let's go here. You know, we should probably save this, right? What do you think?
That sounds like a plan. I love we'll it.
Probably save it.
You know, yeah.
All right, here we go here, and we're going to export time-lapse video. There we go. All righty, and now we're going to hit save video. Good, the export is successful, and there we go, right. Come on, do this for me, baby. Do this for me.
Oh, my. Whoa. That is wild.
It has been my pleasure to visit with you today. Thank you. All librarians are masters of the universe. Never forget it. All library readers are masters and masterettes of the universe. I thank you for your letting me come here.
Well, please come back again at some point, please.
This is what I do. Just ask.
Okay. Well, and read Infinitum. It is so good. You're looking for a copy of your book. There you go. All right. And we are going to close this chapter of Turn
Back to the Guest before you get in trouble.
Oh, man, I have to. Yeah.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.